Good afternoon. If you're joining us off net, this is the Senate Finance Committee. It's Monday, April 13th, 2015. The time is 2:35. With me at the table this afternoon, Senator Dunleavy, Co-Chairman Kelly, Vice Chairman Michicki, Senator Olson, Senator Hoffman, myself, Senator McKinnon, and we should be joined shortly by Senator Bishop. Before the committee this afternoon, SB 82, Alcohol Substance Abuse Mitigation Program, as well as HB 161, Medicaid Used Durable Medical Equipment. Is there anything else to come before the committee before we begin? Seeing and hearing none, I'd like to invite Senator McGuire to the microphone and introduce Senate Bill 82.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I'd like to ask Genevieve Watusek from my office to join me as well.
Thank you.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, Mr. Co-Chairman, and members of the Senate Finance Committee. Senate Bill 82 is a part of what we've been working on in the Judiciary Committee to look at smarter ways of implementing justice. That's the bottom line. We want to hold the right people accountable for the right crimes, lock them away for a long time to protect the public, but we want to start looking at this burgeoning prison population, Madam Chair, that you have spoken with me about and other members here in the room have spoken with me about. Of course, Senator Michicki sits on the Judiciary Committee. We're on a track to build another Goose Creek prison here in the next 6 years if we don't do something different. And so this is one of those pieces that we believe can go toward pulling folks out of your regular cement and bar type incarceration setting and hopefully turn their lives around at a critical point. What this bill would do is allow for a mitigator when a judge goes to sentence someone. So there are aggravators, most of you know this, things that can increase your sentence if torture's involved, if it involves kidnapping, a crime against a young child, or a variety of things. And then there are mitigators, things for which the sentence can be reduced. And we're proposing in this bill, Senate Bill 82, that we would add successful, voluntary participation in the 24/7 sobriety program as a factor that a judge may consider, Madam Chair. I want to emphasize that there's nothing in here that says shall. Mitigators, again, are up to judicial discretion. But what we've seen is a lot of success in this program. It's an evidence-based abstinence program that's been administered in the state of Alaska. There have been over 20,150 breath tests conducted with only 22 failures. And part of it, Madam Chair, is just the structure and the way it's done. People have to come in and test twice a day. There are no exceptions to it. If they fail it, they're immediately arrested. So it's quite a penalty. It's something that people don't enter into too lightly. The policy is based on abstinence, a belief that alcohol and drugs cannot be a part of this person's life, and to help keep a monitoring system in place to help them on that path. There will be immediate consequences, as I indicated, for violations. The emphasis is on personal responsibility and accountability, helping Alaskans who have gone off in a direction start to take responsibility for their life. There's database collection, communication, monitoring, and immediate sanctions, as I mentioned, for behavior and choices. The typical program will last between 90 to 120 days, but it can last up to 6 months if a judge prescribes that. A comparison I wanted to give you is current estimates are that it's about $120 to house an inmate in Goose Creek. The program for the 24/7 sobriety with the ankle monitor and the two-time breath test is less than $15 a day. The breath test itself is $2.50. And again, it goes in twice a day, so that's $5. A urinalysis is $10 and is administered 2 to 3 times a week. That's for the opioids and the other types of drugs. So I put this toward the committee today as just one step. I'd like to see us continue to look at this program. It has 2-0 fiscal notes, Madam Co-Chair. There are funds that come through the Health and Social Services, I want to be clear, that come out of what's called ASAP, the Alcohol Safety and Action Program. Those are for indigent people in the state of Alaska. But generally, the funds are paid for by the individual themselves, and it's a choice that they get to make to go ahead and voluntarily enter this treatment. They want to change their lives. And up until this point of this bill, a judge has not had a way to consider the fact that they've successfully completed voluntary drug and alcohol treatment as a part of their sentence. And I just think that that's something we should really be rewarding, good behavior, and keeping, again, folks out of prison at those high costs if we don't need them there. I don't have to tell you, you're working in STAR, you know that the vast majority of crimes in the state of Alaska are committed by people who are using drugs and alcohol and who are addicted to drugs and alcohol. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, thank you for that introduction. We're going to open the public hearing, and then we'll set the bill aside for today and try to bring it back this week. First, is there anyone here in Juneau wishing to testify on Senate Bill 82, an act relating to mitigating factors at sentencing? Seeing and hearing none, off net, we have Dennis Johnson. Mr. Johnson, are you there? Mr. Johnson.
Yes, I am here.
If you could identify yourself for the record, and then please let us know about any affiliations, and then proceed with 3 minutes of testimony.
Yes, my name is Dennis Johnson. I am the State Director for Alaska Pretrial Services. We are one of the contract agency that handles the 24/7 sobriety program in the Anchorage demographic, and are getting ready to open and handle the 24/7 sobriety program in the Palmer-Wasilla demographic as well. I've been members and chair and co-chair and members of the committee. I've been a part of this 24/7 sobriety program for the last couple of years now. I've seen it from its infancy into its developing, and I want to pay special thanks to Senator McGuire for this proposed bill. I've seen hundreds of people that have come through this program that have done what is asked of them. They've remained sober. They've abstained from drugs and alcohol. I've seen their trials, their tribulations, their pains, and their accomplishments. And to go forward with this program, and if you really think about it, and you look at the fundamental part of this program, is they got to come in twice a day between 6 a.m. and 10 a.m. every day, 7 days a week. And they got to come in every day between 5 p.m. and 9 p.m., 7 days a week. They get no time off for weekends. They get no time off for holidays, not for Christmas, not for New Year's. They show up every day, twice a day. A lot of these people do not have driver's licenses because they're on for DUIs, and they utilize the bus system, and they make it in. They persevere. They push through it. They make it in every day. And at this point in time, our judiciary does not have the ability to provide them some kind of credit for abstaining from alcohol and drugs. This is a program that changes a learned behavior. And I think that this bill will help the judiciary, will help our court system to recognize the success and maybe for folks that have not experienced a drug or alcohol problem, it's maybe hard to understand just the enormity of it. And I think that if we can see this bill through, I think with a zero fiscal note, and all it really is asking is for it to be approved so that it can go into effect, I think it's important. It's a very integral part of the 24/7 program. Senator McGuire gave some numbers. To date, we've seen 31,048 alcohol tests that have been accomplished. We've seen 3,732 UAs that have been accomplished. And at this time, our recidivism is less than 1.7%. That's the lowest it has ever been, and it's a huge, huge accomplishment. And these folks that are making it through it, that are staying away from alcohol and staying away from drugs, coming in twice a day. Some folks have to UA 7 days a week. Every day they come in and alcohol test twice. Every day they come in and UA for drugs twice and are successful. It will give the judges, our judiciary, an opportunity to reward them, to reduce recidivism, and to keep our hard bed space clear for the violent offenders that the jails are for. Thank you for your time. Thank you for allowing me to testify.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, the next off-net who would like to testify, Mr. Tom Butler. Tom, if you could identify yourself for the record, any affiliation, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Tom Butler, and I'm the Colonel of the Montana Highway Patrol. I testified, and I believe this is the third year I've testified regarding 24/7 in Alaska via phone. We have had a program in Montana since the 2011 legislative session. We just have passed, in the last month, 4,000 participants on the program and a little over 600,000 breath tests, and we're coming in at 99.6% of those breath tests are clean. We have a bill in our legislative session to expand our program somewhat. But specific to what's going on in Alaska, I listed the statistics at the beginning of the hearing, and it appears to me you are at the portion where we were at back in 2012 and 13, and I would expect that you would receive continued successes as you move forward expanding the program. If I understand the bill correctly, it appears to me all this does is allow the judge to take into account the success of the offender's participation in the 24/7 program as a part of allowing him to be removed from the program, and that is very similar to what we do in Montana, and I would think it would be a benefit to pass the bill in the fashion that it is. And I'm available for any questions should you have any.
Thank you for joining us, Mr. Colonel Butler. Is there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, is there anyone else off-net or here in Juneau wishing to testify on SB 82, an act relating to mitigating factors at sentencing? Seeing and hearing none, the public hearing is closed. We'll be setting this bill aside. Senator Bishop, you've been here almost the entire time. Welcome. The next bill before the Senate Finance Committee is House Bill 61. We'll be hearing an introduction of this bill and then setting this bill aside. If I could invite Representative Gaddis and Drew Ford to the microphones, identify yourself for the record, and if you could introduce the CS for House Bill number 161, Hess. Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. Where I'm stuck is I was not, let me back up. This is Representative Lynn Gaddis. I represent District 7, the Greater Wasilla, and I apologize where I'm stumbling is the CS aspect. So I wasn't aware that there was a CS to introduce.
Ms. Gaddis, one moment.
Thank you.
Back on the record, Representative Gaddis.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize. Leaving one committee to another, I wasn't on track. I would like to basically present this House Bill 161. The idea for this bill was brought to me by the Key Coalition. I thank them for their hard work. As a cost savings bill for the state of Alaska, House Bill 161 would simply allow the Department of Health and Social Services to purchase used or refurbished durable medical equipment. Currently, the department only purchases new medical equipment. To give you an idea what durable medical equipment is, it includes devices such as canes, crutches, wheelchairs, lifts, braces, and many other expensive equipment that can be used over and over again. Being able to purchase equipment used would provide substantial savings for the state of Alaska. An example of those savings shown through organizations like Access Alaska. House Bill 161 is simply a cost-saving bill. kind of like myself being raised in a large family, we did hand-me-downs. There was nothing wrong with them. We used them over and over again, kid by kid. So thank you, Madam Chair. Again, I hate to say that it's a relatively simple bill, but many of us were raised with hand-me-downs, and that's exactly what this is. Thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Thank you, Representative Gaddis. With that, we'd like to open the public hearing on the CS for House Bill number 161. It's an act relating to the purchase of durable medical equipment under Medicaid and providing for an effective date. We'll start here in Juneau. Millie Ryan. Welcome to Senate Finance, Ms. Ryan. Your name, affiliation for the record, and then proceed with your testimony.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Millie Ryan. I'm the Executive Director of REACH here in Juneau. REACH provides services to about 400 individuals with intellectual and developmental disabilities in northern southeast Alaska. I'm also talking on behalf of the Alaska Association on Developmental Disabilities, which is made up of providers similar to REACH. We very much support this bill. We know it's going to save the state money based on Access Alaska's experience. In FY14, they sanitized and repaired, if needed, 2,064 pieces of equipment, resulting in a total cost savings of $461,000. But not only that, the program really will benefit individuals who need durable medical equipment. We had a young woman who has transitioned from living with her parents who are no longer able to care for her to living on her own, was delayed because of the time and expense of getting durable medical equipment out of Seattle. Had this program been available, there would have been a less expensive transition. Her transition would have been more timely, and a piece of old equipment would not have been gathering dust or ending up in a landfill because she couldn't use it. So, again, I strongly support this bill and wondering if you have any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. Are there questions from committee members? Senator Dunleavy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this is a new bill, and I maybe I missed it, but when somebody's done using a piece of equipment, whether it be a walker, something along those lines, if it's in their garage, how are the folks that need it, that need to purchase it, how are you going to broker that?
The ATLA, this is a program that provides assistive technology, maintains a loan closet, so that could be refurbished. Access Alaska collects things both in their Fairbanks and Matsu and Anchorage office and refurbishes it and sanitizes it, and they get the word out to people that the device is available.
Through the chair.
Senator Dunleavy.
Yeah, the only reason I asked that is my wife's undergone a knee replacement, so she has a number of very expensive specialized pieces of equipment that you don't use in your daily life once your knee is up and running. We don't know where to send it. We don't know who to give it to. We don't know what the process is, and I would imagine there's other folks with other types of equipment, so.
That would be part of the program, would be letting folks know that they can donate their equipment, letting folks know that reused equipment is available to them. And I think most people are willing to take it if it's been sanitized and repaired and those sorts of things. I know when my husband died, I had a wheelchair that I looked really hard to find someone to take it. And finally did, but it was useful by some other folks, but marketing will definitely be a component of the program.
Senator Dunleavy.
Just one last follow-up. Just a thought. I don't know how you would do it, if it'd be part of the bill or just some other approach, but when a doctor has performed a certain procedure, knowing that piece of equipment is specialized and just for that particular procedure, maybe there's a way that they can notify the individual that when they're done with the piece of equipment, they can return it to someplace or donate to someplace that would fall into this.
Yeah, that makes really good sense.
Any other questions? Thank you, Ms. Ryan, for coming out today. Next off net, we have John Cannon. Mr. Cannon, if you could identify yourself for the record, and then please proceed with your 3 minutes of testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon. My name is John Cannon. I live in Wasilla, Alaska. I serve as the president of the Key Coalition of Alaska. And, of course, I'm online this afternoon to speak in favor of House Bill 161. As was mentioned earlier, this bill addresses really one of Key Coalition's top priorities this year, to allow the use of Medicaid funds for the purchase of used and refurbished durable medical equipment. On behalf of the Key Coalition, I want to thank Senator Stoltz and Representative Gaddis for sponsoring this bill. And I want to thank the Finance Committee for hearing this bill this afternoon. As was stated, the state of Alaska prohibits the purchase of used equipment with Medicaid dollars. The federal government allows these purchases, and many other states have implemented reuse systems, which for those states have shown proven results in terms of cost savings. The idea of a durable medical equipment reuse program for Alaska makes sense. The idea of reusing valuable DME that's no longer needed and having that equipment available for other Alaskans, it just makes sense, both from a cost savings perspective and a user perspective. I think it's wise to keep the language in the bill simple as it's been written. This approach allows the department to work through probably quite a bit of detail, actually extensive detail that would be required to set up Alaska's DME reuse program. One point, I think, to Senator Dunleavy's question earlier, I know other states have really taken a close look at ownership of the equipment and have gone with state ownership of the expensive equipment with the condition that when the user no longer needs it, that it just puts a little more teeth into reuse, rather than seeing the equipment go on Craig's list or, worst case, in a landfill. Kansas has one of the most established DME reuse programs, and the folks from Kansas really caution states that are considering this program in terms of the impact on DME providers. Because for a state like Alaska, I think it's going to be important to keep healthy partnerships with DME providers like Geneva Woods Pharmacy and others, because we're anticipating just, we're already experiencing, Madam Chair, a tremendous growth in senior population. And so we want to make sure that all the partners are on board to ensure adequate supplies of equipment are available for all Alaskans, for all users. So in closing, I urge you to pass HB 161 and to move this bill out of committee. It will result in needed savings for our state at a time they're really needed. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you for your testimony in Senate Finance, Mr. Cannon. Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, the next person waiting to testify, Patrick Reinhart. Mr. Reinhart, welcome to Senate Finance. If you could state your name and affiliation for the record, and then please proceed with your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Patrick Reinhart. I'm the Executive Director of the Governor's Council on Disabilities and Special Education, and I'm calling in from Anchorage. I am calling to urge support for HB 161. It is an issue that the Key campaign brought forward earlier, as well as the council. And we believe this concept is a good one for consideration. I'll just give you a real quick example of what I've seen in other states. A couple years ago, I was in Wisconsin. My wife and I were headed to see a Packer game at Lambeau Field, and we stopped by a friend's center, the Independent Living Center, and they were just opening up a durable medical equipment reuse store that was called the Mobility Store. I'd never really seen anything like it, but going into this store, I saw basically dozens and dozens of really good power wheelchairs and manual wheelchairs, hospital equipment, all kinds of walkers, and it was a very large place filled with all equipment to me that looked brand new. But the price tag on this equipment that was for sale to the general public is basically about a third of what you would see out on the for brand new equipment. So essentially, people could go in with their own money and buy a piece of equipment, but if they had a third-party payer, such as a school district or a the Division of Vocational Rehabilitation, another entity, or even Medicaid, they would pay for it. They was allowed to be to purchase a used piece of equipment under Medicaid under that respect. That's kind of how this idea works. The equipment, can, as John had, Cannon had stated, can really have a sticker that says it, it kind of belongs to the state of Alaska, and people know what to do, and it's on that piece of equipment when it gets issued to them if it's been purchased by Medicaid, that when you're done, here's where you go, or here's how you call, or here's who you call to make sure the equipment goes back into reuse. One of the other positive outcomes I saw out of the program in Wisconsin and Milwaukee was that almost all the people that worked in that mobility store were people with disabilities themselves. And as a council that's all over the issue of employment for people with disabilities, we like the potential of that added outcome if there's more equipment going out into the marketplace that has to be refurbished and put back to use. The idea of employing people with disabilities to help in that matter is maybe a potential good outcome. In Wisconsin, they used prison inmates to do the refurbishing, which was an interesting concept. That's really all I wanted to say today. We definitely support HB 161. Again, thanks to Representative Gaddis and Senator Stoltz bringing the companion bill on the Senate side. We urge the committee to support it, so thank you.
Are there questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, Mr. Reinhart, thank you for joining Senate Finance today. Is there anyone else wishing to testify on House Bill 161, an act relating to the purchase of durable medical equipment under Medicaid and providing for an effective date? The public hearing is closed. Representative Gaddis, could you join us back at the microphone? For the committee, we also have Chad Hope from the Department of Health and Social Services. Could you walk us through the process? Senator Dunleavy started the conversation, but how would how will a member of the public at large be able to access the reused medical equipment, or is there something in place for that yet?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for the record again, Representative Gaddis. This was a Medicaid or for the state of Alaska, so it wasn't necessarily out there for the general public per se, but it also allows the general public to access. So quite frankly, it essentially says that the state of Alaska may, not shall, because as it went through different processes through the House, large state, a lot of places that we may fly or ship equipment. We don't want to force people to buy used equipment when, quite frankly, new equipment might be cheaper depending on how you get it. So there's where the may comes in. But essentially, it does allow Alaska to use, the state of Alaska, to use used equipment. So right now, we cannot use used equipment as the state. So how it allows Senator Dunleavy to utilize it, what it does is it will allow, when we allow the state to do that, there are folks out there that say that they'll start collecting this, knowing that there's an outlet, and certainly private people will also be able to participate. But it truly is a bill for the state of Alaska to save money.
Senator Dunleavy.
Okay, that was the key, because for a second I thought, through the chair, you were saying there was a law that prevented people from using used equipment. What you're saying is this law would allow, is it reimbursements on the Medicaid, or excuse me, reimbursements on the equipment? Because, like I said, I thought that's what it was. Then when you were talking, I was left with the impression that it's against the law to use used equipment, like a walker that's used or a cane that's used, but that's not the case, is it?
Through the chair, Senator Dunleavy, sorry, it's against the law right now for the state to use used equipment.
Not individuals in the state.
Not individuals. The state Medicaid.
State Medicaid. Okay. That's it. Thank you.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'd like to clarify, currently Hess is only allowed to buy new equipment. This bill will allow them to use payment for used equipment if it meets protocol.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, that is correct.
Thank you.
Representative Yannis, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. As you look at the prohibition that's there, what was the reason the prohibition was in place in order for Health and Social Services to only go ahead and purchase new equipment?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, I can only make the assumption that there were folks that sold new equipment and they wanted to continue selling new equipment. And as we reutilize used equipment, those that sell new equipment wouldn't have that opportunity. And again, that's just my assumption.
Last question, Madam Chairman. So are there people opposed to this legislation?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, certainly those that sell new equipment.
You've heard from them then.
I have heard from some.
Madam Chairman, thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Senator Michicki.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Rep. Gaddis, I appreciate you bringing this forward. I co-sponsored it on the floor today because I think it's the right thing to do. We're looking at a lot of these things during tough times as we're trying to make reforms that are more efficient. And, you know, I think there are protectionist policies throughout our code, and that's probably why you'll hear some opposition. But as we make the services that are received through Medicaid more efficient, we're going to have to be looking at these things. That includes the bill we passed today with immunization and Teladoc and things like that. And I just have a little story, and that is this came to my attention with a constituent that came to visit during the Key campaign. She is a quadriplegic and has a very specialized wheelchair. She had a brand new other specialized wheelchair that wasn't quite as well fitted to her condition. It's sitting in her garage, unable for it to be reassigned to someone else. It's a $40,000 wheelchair. So I very much appreciate you bringing this forward. I'm very supportive. Thanks.
Thank you. We have Mr. Chad Hope online. Mr. Hope, are you there?
Good afternoon. This is Chad Hope from the Department of Health and Social Services. I would be happy to answer any questions that either the chair or the committee may have.
Certainly, Mr. Hope, I have a couple questions. The first question is if you could speak to Senator Olson's question regarding why we currently don't allow under Medicaid reimbursement used equipment.
So Senator Olson, through the chair, in limited situations, we have set up where we will rent items rather than purchase the items. The specific history on that unfortunately predates me, but it is true that our current fee schedule and coverage regulations are set up to purchase new equipment, and we do not have a purchase coverage or fee schedule rate for used equipment. This idea was brought up by Mr. Reinhart to us last summer. And at that time, he had a very compelling argument, and we began working at that point on establishing new regulations and fee schedule to allow for the purchase or rental of used equipment. However, we have not been able to implement at this time.
Senator Olson?
I have no further questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Hope, is there liability to the state of Alaska for the use of used equipment, or how will that work?
Madam Chair, there are many, many operational issues, some of which I have not thought through fully or are going to have to be developed as this moves forward. At least at this time, it is our understanding that by revising our coverage and fee schedule to allow providers to provide this equipment, that would be the intervention on the department's end. As far as whether there is liability on the providers of the used equipment, those questions I unfortunately can't answer in great detail.
If you could hold on for a moment, Mr. Hope, Representative Gaddis would like to make a comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And essentially, we left the regulations, I should back up, the bill allows the flexibility for regulations to be made available that actually that they can fit this in. So essentially, without the bill and the way it reads, the department has said that this works for them to be able to make the regulations that define the liability and how that'll work.
Mr. Hope, do you have any additional comments regarding liability?
No additional comments, Madam Chair.
Are there any other questions from committee members? Seeing and hearing none, we're going to set HB 161 aside. Is there any other items to come before the Senate Finance Committee today? Brief at ease. We're back on the record. I've been told that we haven't noticed this yet, but so you're the first to hear. Tomorrow, Tuesday, April 14th at 2015 at 9 a.m., we'll be taking up Senate Bill 53, Advanced Practice Registered Nurses, followed by an introduction of HB 146, Municipal Tax Exemptions. In the afternoon, Tuesday, April 14th, 2015, 1:30 p.m., we'll be taking up HB 158, Refined Fuel Surcharge Motor Fuel Tax. And pending referral, we'll be hearing an introduction on HB 106, Uniform Child Support and Parentage. We have had that bill up as a Senate version, but if it makes it over to us, we'll be hearing from that tomorrow. Is there anything else to come before the committee? Seeing and hearing none, finance is adjourned.